This is the End User, episode 67 for Thursday, September 15th, The Future. Hello and welcome to the End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User, I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr, and I know, Chris, there's one story that you are really excited about this week because you spent, like, all day yesterday watching the live cast of the keynote.
Yeah, I spent 3 hours watching the Windows 8 keynote, and it was 3 hours well spent, Taylor.
Well, I watched the 8-minute summary on Lifehacker, which we should probably throw in the show notes. Since probably not a lot of other people will want to watch the whole 3-hour keynote. But I do have to admit, it looks
good summary,
really cool. A lot of new stuff. Now, mostly what I'm impressed with is that it doesn't feel exactly like Vista was. When they announced all the new features of Vista, I was like, they're clearly being very forward-thinking, but they're not thinking forward in the way that the rest of us are.
Well,
like they had tried to build in voice commands, you know, native into the system, and I mean, I think most people can agree they kind of went the wrong direction.
Well, Vista was cool with SP1 because it gained a lot of stability, and it was fine after that. But yeah, the initial outing.
I'm talking about their future features, their killer apps. People wanted them to be.
It's like Windows 7 is the logical conclusion to what this desktop metaphor can possibly be, I think. What else are you going to add to it? Not a whole lot, you know, it's kind of an end. But Windows 8, yeah, it's completely, they keep calling it a reimagination of Windows.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it is. And if you are unfamiliar with it for whatever reason, living under a rock or something like that. We're passing along a story from Dwight Silverman. He did a great wrap-up of everything that's in there. But what's really cool is that you get this new tablet-y interface, and it's just Windows, though. Like,
now, this seems,
you can still get underneath the hood and do whatever you did with Windows. And
right. But this
even on a 1 gigahertz slate.
This Metro UI seems to come right out of Windows Phone 7. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but it definitely looks like, you know, you can see the kind of evolution from the iOS inspiration to the Metro UI and from Windows Phone 7 to Windows 8. You know, you can see all those lines there. And definitely there's a lot of stuff that breaks new ground. They're doing their own thing. I can see a lot of potential functionality in there. And I'm pretty excited about it. But still, I'm just saying, you can kind of follow those lines.
Yeah, and well, you know where all that originated, right? Trace it back. You go Windows 8 to Windows Phone to Zune to Media Center.
No, well, I trace it more back to iOS and multi-touch.
Yeah, I could see that. There's influences coming all over the place, but the main thing is it came from Media Center. That's where all this Metro design came from. It was all based in Media Center originally.
You're just talking about the tile design. Yeah,
yeah, not like the multi-touch stuff.
Yeah, I see that. I was thinking more in terms of functionality, where that originates, because I don't see that as coming directly from Media Center. But sure, the Metro UI, I see that as that is definitely an offspring of Media Center, which is great. You know, that's one thing that Microsoft has always been ahead of the curve on that.
Now, what do you think about including the legacy Windows desktop, as many have been calling it?
You know, I think that's...
Is that confusing?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's the new stuff. It's the Metro stuff that's going to be confusing. And having that Windows desktop in there is going to be a crutch for a lot of people making the transition.
Yeah, even when I started using the preview build, which is, by the way, available at, I think it's dev.windows.com, if I remember. But you can go download that and install it if you want right now, just to get a little preview of it. It's not like the beta from Windows 7, though. It's buggy. It's not there yet. But it will give you a little preview of what you can look forward to in the future, or what you can deny and keep using Windows 7.
Yeah, sure.
But it's kind of confusing, because it's like all the abstract metaphors that you've learned in the desktop are kind of thrown away. So I found that when I was first using it, all my instincts were wrong. So if I wanted to accomplish something, my instinct was wrong. You know, now I can sit down in front of OS X or Windows, whatever. You can sit down and you can say, oh, well, you know, there's a drop-down menu called Edit, and underneath that there's a feature called Copy, right? You kind of know that's there. But now there's no drop-down menu. It's all the things that you know about desktop computing are kind of turned on its head. So it's a little bit confusing until you can kind of wrap your head around it.
Yeah. Now, they're also saying that Windows 8 is going to be able to launch on either even less powerful hardware than Windows 7. I think they're saying like a gig of RAM and an ARM processor is going to be able to run it.
Yeah, the baseline is 1 gig of RAM and a 1 gigahertz processor.
That's pretty crazy. I mean,
and by the way, I installed it on my 900 megahertz netbook, and it was horrible. So I don't think I would go for a low end experience like that. But I could see, you know, a 1.2 gigahertz dual core ARM processor or something being just fine. In fact, you know, my netbook couldn't even handle the Metro interface; wouldn't do anything.
Well, that seems pretty advanced for that low level. I mean, you wouldn't want to run the Metro on something that...
Well, what it is, the screen resolution is the issue there. So if you're under 768 pixels wide, you're not allowed to use the Metro interface.
Hmm. 768 pixels, a gig of RAM, 1 gigahertz. You know what I think? I think it's only a matter of time before somebody gets Windows 8 running on an iPad.
Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome? Well, I guess... Well, I don't know, because they make their own chip. That's tough.
It's dual core, 1 gigahertz.
Well, right, but it's their own chip with their own hardware tie-ins and stuff like that.
So, well, the architecture is still ARM.
Yeah, you'd have to write custom drivers for it. It's my guess.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're writing custom multi-touch drivers for Android on the HP
touchpad.
Touchpad.
Yeah, you know, it's never going to work like you want it to work. I don't even know. People are trying to get Android on there. It's just not going to work.
Having it work is working enough.
Yeah, so TechZany in the chat room says, no netbooks can run Windows 8 yet, maybe. So it all comes down to the screen resolution. They recommend a 1 gigahertz processor, and I installed it on my netbook, which is 900 megahertz Celeron. And what's limiting is not necessarily the processor, but the size of the screen. So that's really the issue there, is that you can't run the Metro apps if you don't have 768 pixels wide. That's basically that. But, you know, come on. That's so low powered. It's fine. We can all deal with that, I think. I hope.
Yeah. Well, computers are going to get more powerful.
It's going to get interesting, and people like us are going to have to get used to the new interface, and people like us are going to scream bloody murder as we go through the change. It's funny, it's a role reversal. Usually the people who don't care much have to do the getting used to, but this time it's the power user that has to get used to the simplicity, unless you go back to the old Windows desktop, but... we're going to have to get used to it, and we're going to have to learn new instincts, like I was talking about earlier. So it's going to be an interesting time, and we'll see how it goes. And what's really cool, this will be the last thing on Windows 8, I guess, the development tools. You can code in JavaScript, HTML5, C, C++, and C#, all of it. So it's like whatever language you know that's not Objective-C, you're kind of good.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? They've always been really good with their developer tools, and writing JavaScript in Visual Studio is a weird thought, but that's one that's going to be a reality.
Okay. Well, here's another reality for you. Google is now the owner of Zagat Restaurant Ratings.
Whoa! Zagat?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Zagat. Why, how do you say it?
I always said Zagat.
That just sounds offensive.
Dag Zagat.
How dare you?
How dare you?
Well,
get this profanity off my podcast.
So Google is just on a spending spree, huh? I mean, it was last month they bought Motorola's phone division. You know, now they paid $125 million for Zagat. Now, the speculation is they're going to use this for their you know, for their places ranking system to kind of compete with Yelp.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've got the Google Maps elephant in the room, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to
it's gold.
Combine everything here.
Local search, man.
Yeah,
that's the next. That's the current big thing, I should say, not the next big thing. But yeah, do you use Zagat? They have an app for iPhone and Android.
I do not, and I had no idea they had an app.
You know what I always look on? I look on Foursquare. That's what I use.
Really?
Yeah, look on Foursquare. Look at the reviews of whatever place you're going to.
Hmm.
It's nice.
I tend to use more localized, curated guides. Like for DC, I use the Washington Post Going Out Guide.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
New York has a bunch of different ones.
I find Foursquare to be like a more personal look at things. You get less of the aggregate, the wisdom of the crowds, and you get a couple people, just a couple people who, you know, actually went there. Maybe they even took a picture of the food, and it's nice.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, but you can get some of that on Yelp. I mean, I guess it is more of a crowd thing. But a lot of people, you know, will use the forums on Chowhound or a bunch of other things. But a lot of people also use Zagat, and everybody uses Google at one point or another.
Yeah, definitely. This is a huge win. I mean, to be able to, at least if this goes through, which it will, to be able to search the local maps just using iPhone or Android or Windows Phone. Actually, I don't know. Does Windows Phone have Google Maps? I don't know about that now that I say that aloud. But
no, I think it's got Bing Maps.
But does it have both?
No, I guess you could go to maps.google.com on your Windows.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I don't think it has it built in.
To have integrated results from Zagat, which I have to learn to say again, is a huge win for just about everybody, because Google Maps is like the standard map search that I think most people use. You know, unless you're stuck in the late 90s and using Yahoo Maps or something.
Some people still use MapQuest.
I know. It's like, that was the joke on Parks and Rec. They use AltaVista and MapQuest.
Uh-huh.
So
you can't even use AltaVista anymore.
No, AltaVista's still around.
I don't think it is. If it is, it's powered by something else.
Yeah, AltaVista.com. It's right there. Powered by Yahoo. There you go. You can still AltaVista. I just AltaVista'd something.
Well, it looks different. It's not the same.
Nah, it's not the same. By the way, you can also go to oldapps.com and download Netscape while you're at it. It works on Windows 7.
Is that what you had to do?
No. No, I didn't have to do that because Firefox worked for that. So.
Okay. Well, can you run Flash on Netscape?
I don't think you can.
Yeah.
But well, the real question is, can you do it on your iPhone?
Well, yeah, you can now.
Wait, what?
And you have been able to, you know, there have been hacks around it for a while. A bunch of third-party browsers for the iPhone and the iPad have just used server-side processing to convert Flash video. Now Adobe is bringing that home. They're going to do their own server-side video conversion for Flash videos on the iPad or the iPhone, and the idea is that this will be in the future integrated into Safari and other first-party apps for iOS.
See, now I want them to do this for Android because. You know, okay, Android does Flash, but man, it's painful. So,
but you also can get server-side video rendering for Flash on Android.
Oh, you can? I didn't realize it was doing that.
Well, because I use the Skyfire browser on iOS,
yeah.
And you can get that for...
Hey, we can play the traceback the lineage again. Where did Skyfire come from?
I don't even know. I think it's WebKit, isn't it?
I don't know if it's WebKit, but anyways, it came from Windows Mobile. That was their first platform.
Oh, that's right, back in, yeah.
Yeah, it was Windows Mobile, and I think they had a BlackBerry.
And that's how, beta. When you had a Windows Mobile phone, that's how you would always use Flash, and you would show
I could watch Hulu like, before
Taylor,
they blocked it.
I can watch Hulu on my Windows Mobile phone, and you
Take
have
that.
A fancy new phone, and you can't.
Take that, But this is really much better. I mean, we talked about earlier with Windows 8 and its processing power. I mean, if you've got a tablet or something like an iPad that has a 1 gigahertz processor, then if you start to get into Flash, it's you're in trouble.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind having offloading my Flash processing videos from my laptop
from OS 10. Yeah,
I'd lower my CPU consumption by a good 20%.
Yeah, sure. That Flash on Mac is really terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. It's really bad though.
It's unfortunate. Yeah, I would love to have them crunch that server side for me.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, another thing that's being outsourced to a higher power is.
I see what you did there, sir.
The problem with patents in this country, and if you are completely unfamiliar with the patent control issues in this country, well, then this is your first time listening to The End User, so welcome. And you can listen to our back episodes if you want to learn a bit about it. Or if you want a really great succinct summary, you should listen to the patent episode of This American Life from a few weeks ago. But anyway, patents are a mess in this country. There are all these patent trolling organizations that sue people for coming up with original ideas that...
Paul Allen, we're looking in your direction.
That the company was smart enough to file a patent vague enough to potentially cover what someone else invented. And in addition to that, because this system is so complicated, the patent office is just backed up by years. So the Senate has finally approved a bill that passed with flying colors to overhaul the operations of the patent office and supposedly, hopefully, streamline this and make it a little bit more fair.
Yeah, I think the news here is not like what the bill is actually going to do, but the fact that people are thinking about it now, because we've known for a long time that the patent system is what are you, swatting flies over there?
Yep, it's a mosquito.
Oh, okay. I was thinking like a ninja skill. You just grab it, you know, and then let it go.
I wish. It's still flying around. It's going to bite me.
Uh-oh. But anyway, what's interesting is that the conversation is happening, and it's interesting that it's happening in a way that it has never happened before, because it's gotten really complicated. And you know, we've got all these companies who don't really do anything, but then reap benefits from the patents that they hold without actually having a product. And I hope that this bill in the Senate will be one step closer to solving some of those issues, you know? So the conversation's happening. That's the important thing to take away from this.
Certainly what we want is for the system to be more efficient and more fair.
Yeah, I mean, there was a place for patents. I mean, some people say, oh, well, you just get rid of the whole damn thing, and that's crazy. You know, that's not a good way to go about doing things, because people get patents because they want to protect what they've invested to make, so that other companies can't, you know, just steal their implementation of something and then use it for themselves for profit. That's the whole reason we have patents. So it would be crazy to just get rid of all patents, particularly software patents. There's a place for them, but the way they're implemented right now is insane. It's crazy. So it's good to start this conversation in the Senate and see what we can get out of this, and see if we can get some efficiency in the patent office to be a little harder on approving patents and issuing patents as after the application has gone through, and also to stop stupid litigation from some companies that don't rightly deserve to have their patent. I killed it. Oh no.
Yeah.
I killed Taylor.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I think you nailed it. No, it's the mosquito. Damn it.
I get a little heated talking about patents.
I managed to follow all that. You got pretty deep in there. I mean, I think that most people in this country know that there are serious problems to be addressed. Fortunately, the Senate knows it as well. And even in the midst of a crazy bipartisanship, we can hope that some progress can be made.
Yes.
Anything else you want to cover on this one?
I got my rant out. I got my rant out. Right. I guess one more thing. One of our listeners in the Ustream chat there says that the bill has passed the Senate and has been sent to Obama. I don't think we mentioned that. So that's what happens when a
bill passes the Senate.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, it needs to be stated. I want a taquito right now.
And sometimes it does get sent back to the House. So it's done in the House, it's done in the Senate, and now it's on Obama's desk.
But I want a taquito. That's the more pressing matter is that I want a taquito, Taylor. From 7-Eleven.
Okay. Well, you can get a taquito. I don't recommend it. But another thing that you'll be able to do soon at 7-Eleven, not quite yet, unless you live in Seattle, is to pick up an Amazon package.
Say what?
So Amazon and 7-Eleven are testing a pilot program where they have a computerized locker system that accepts Amazon deliveries.
That's weird. That's almost like Amazon is getting a retail location halfway. That's really strange. What's in it for 7-Eleven?
It's sort of like that, but you know, a lot of people have trouble receiving packages during the day. You know, if nobody's at your house and you can't get it delivered to the house, you know, can't have it left outside or can't get it delivered to work, you know, it's got to go somewhere as well.
Yeah, I guess. See, I've got a doorman here at my apartment building, so that's not so bad. But yeah, in the situation where you're at a house, it does make it difficult.
Yeah, and you know, even a lot of large apartment buildings don't have doormen, and some apartment buildings with doormen don't accept packages.
But what's in it for 7-Eleven? That's what I'm curious about.
Money? People walking through the door?
I guess, yeah. You can attract people in. You can use the dominance of an online retail service to get people to come in the door. Maybe they'll buy a coffee or something. I can see that. Yeah, or a Slurpee. Perhaps a Darth Vader head Slurpee.
Or a taquito.
Or a taquito in a Slurpee. Ooh, that's no good.
No, that's not good. A taquito-flavored Slurpee?
Yeah, that's what Michael Arrington eats for lunch. Didn't you know that?
You can eat Slurpees?
Hey, you eat a Slurpee with a taquito in it, like it's ice.
Well, I'm surprised that he can afford such extravagance, especially seeing as how he got fired from AOL.
He was trying to get fired. He went through a whole bunch of shenanigans. He wanted out, I think.
It didn't seem to me like he was trying to get fired. I mean, he kind of was still doing his job for a while, even after he was fired.
I mean, AOL sent him a memo and said, do not leak this memo, and then he published it on TechCrunch.
Right. Well, so what happened was he sold his company, TechCrunch, to AOL, but they kind of had an agreement for a while that he would maintain editorial control, and then it was decided that that would not be the case anymore, and he was pretty mad about it. He said, here's the deal. You sell my company back to me, or you let me keep on doing what I want with TechCrunch. And they said, no, here's the deal. You're fired.
You're fired.
Was that your Trump? That was awful.
That was terrible.
You didn't even bother to try to mess up your hair.
I apologize. No,
work
I won't
on
even
it. Come back next week.
I'll work
otherwise,
on it. We'll come back next week.
Fired.
I don't know. I think he was trying to get fired. I think he was tired of being in the AOL, being second in command to Arianna Huffington.
Oh yeah, it's,
and being second in command to Engadget. I mean, Engadget was
like
bigger than they were.
He was bristling at the chain of command there, but at the same time, you know, he still really does seem to have a strong connection to TechCrunch, and he liked being there. So I think
it's his baby. I mean, he started that so that he could get ties into the startup culture in technology. So yeah, I mean, of course. But it'll become clear to him that there's no point in going on with this. At least there's no point in going on with this the way it's going now. You know,
that Taipei news agency that does the the machinima animations of news stories. They did a hilarious one on this.
Oh, I missed that. I'll have to go back and watch that one.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It's just totally off the wall.
All right, with that, I think, Taylor, we should move a little more quickly and turn on the afterburners.
All right, let's turn on the afterburners. I am braced for launch.
All right, start us off.
Okay. Facebook is launching a new feature this week, Smart Lists. I guess it's like smart playlists on iTunes or something. Anyway, it aggregates your friends in an automatic way, which is weird to me. Like, can you really not make your own friends list? But yeah, they have that now.
They have that now, so I guess go take advantage of it. We used to cover Facebook stories and talk about them a lot. Now it's just like, yeah, I guess Facebook did this. You know,
if you're a Facebook power user and you don't already have your lists set up exactly the way that you like them, then go check out this feature. This is surprising even because Google Circles and Google Plus is all about stuff like this with circles. They don't even have a feature like this.
Yeah, so go check it out. It's kind of interesting, although a small detail, I guess. So moving right along, the Droid Bionic is finally here, Mr. Marr. It's been
a long time. Yeah, and it was so long, in fact, that they upgraded it twice before they even released it.
Yeah, so now it's LTE equipped, and it has the dual core processor. It's going to be $300 on Verizon.
I think it's even like 1.5 gigahertz dual core. It's got the biggest battery of any phone that you can get in the U.S., and then you can even get an even bigger battery if you don't care at all how big your phone is, because it's enormous.
Correct. It's a gigahertz and a half.
Yeah. And dual core. And it's LTE. It's on Verizon. So it's just crazy fast in every respect. If you are looking for a powerhouse of a phone, a supercomputer of a phone, this is the one you want. This is the one you've been waiting for.
And until Ice Cream Sandwich comes out.
$300 on contract.
On contract. That sucks. That's not the modern smartphone cost.
Right. Now, if you want to wait even longer for a phone with a bigger screen, potentially even more powerful, you'll have to wait for the Samsung Galaxy Note, even bigger than the Dell Streak, which is now off the market. This is 5.3 inches.
Whoa. So
it's practically a tablet. And indeed, it comes with a stylus.
You could win a fight with this phone.
You can knock somebody out with this phone.
You got a 5.3-inch piece of glass in your hand. You could do some damage with that.
You could start a war with this phone.
Now, would this fit in your pocket?
My pocket, yeah, no problem.
So why wouldn't you want it then? It's too much?
Because it's not an iPhone.
Well, that too.
I don't know. Yeah, I think this is, even if it would fit in my pocket, I don't think it would be comfortable. I think it is just too much for me. But, you know, there are people out there with pretty big hands.
Yeah, I guess if you're like 6'7", maybe this would be a good handset for you. But
and it turns out people that tall did really love the Dell Streak, so they might go for this.
It's not surprising. So Samsung had a bunch of announcements, a bunch of Android devices, and if you want some more details, we'll have some links in the show notes for you, along with the 5.3-inch phone.
Yeah, the Samsung Galaxy 2 is starting to appear, and they've already got some other new prototypes that aren't gigantic. The Galaxy W, I don't know, a bunch of new laptops and tablets too.
What's a little boring about that, and the reason why we're not going to talk about it, is because it's like the last breath of not Ice Cream Sandwich phones. So if you really want to not have the next version of Android, these are the phones that you should probably get, you know. So we're going to see a lot of action coming either, should be by the end of this month or possibly the end of next month is what the rumor is. So we'll talk about Ice Cream Sandwich when that comes out and the devices that are going to be on there.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so some more Google news. They have announced a new computer language for structured web programming, and they're calling it Dart.
This makes no sense. I don't understand.
To us.
Yeah, I don't understand what they're trying to achieve here. There are, like, this already exists with JavaScript and HTML5. I don't understand what they're trying to do here.
Well, Dart sounds cooler, so there you go.
It's explained as like a JavaScript and Python combination, which, by the way, already exists. So I'm not really sure what the details are lacking right now. So I guess we'll have to wait a little bit to figure out exactly what this is all about. But Google launching a new language is kind of a big deal. So we'll keep our ear to the ground on that one.
We will. And in order to get closer to the ground, we're going to have to turn off the afterburners.
Yes. We are landing after having turned off the afterburners. Because if you land with the afterburners on, you will crash.
You'll get, like, skid marks and burns and stuff.
I need like, a sound effect or something. You know, like, if we forget to turn the afterburners off and we move along, I can make a crash sound or something. That would be pretty cool. So let's move on to the end-user stories, just items of interest that we have. First thing up, I'll take it. Breaking Bad Seasons 1 through 3... now on Netflix instant streaming, at least for those of us in the United States. Now, you've already watched this. I have yet to watch it, so I'm excited. You're probably ambivalent about this, right?
Well, I have cable, and so I've watched it. and I don't have Netflix, so I can't watch it there.
And Netflix is my cable, so This is very exciting to me. We just got Mad Men, and now we've got Breaking Bad, and Louis is on there now. A lot of fantastic shows to catch up on Netflix Instant. And they didn't even pay me to say that.
A lot of shows which I have been waiting irritably for you to watch for years.
This is one of them. All right, well, hit us with your green tech, and then we'll talk about terms of service.
Okay, yeah, sure. This is an interesting one. More news from Google. They have done a comprehensive performance report giving the amount of energy that all of their services use. So this is not the power that it takes to run your computer or leave the lights on in your house, but just what it takes for you to use Gmail or watch YouTube or any of the other stuff that they do.
Oh, weird. That's a strange abstraction.
This includes all of their development and primarily their data centers. And they kind of want to show exactly how efficient all of this stuff is. So the average user of Gmail using it for 1 year, it uses less power on Google's end than it would to drink a bottle of wine, stuff a message in it, pop a cork in it, and toss it in the ocean.
I love how they package this in a really cute way. You know, it's not just straightforward.
Right. I think they're trying to relate them, not really humanizing, but, what else would you do if there were no email? What would you do if there were no YouTube?
Okay. I see,
watch one DVD. Well, 3 days straight of YouTube watching is the equivalent energy of manufacturing, packaging, and deliver a single DVD.
So if you want to be green, you want to stream things over Netflix, YouTube, Vudu, so on.
Right. If you want to be green, you should send messages over Gmail, not messages in a bottle.
Right. I keep trying to get people to stop sending me physical mail. I wish I could actually stop people.
Yeah, I know. I'm really tired of having to go out to the ocean every day and pick up my mail. It's really, yeah. And I just, the utilities are getting really mad about accepting all these sea-laden wine bottles. It's really annoying. All these messages in a bottle. Just email me. Jeez.
All right, well, let's round back around and talk about terms of service. So we're going to pass along an article in the show notes, and apparently it was one grad student's project to simplify a terms of service, and he chose the Apple iTunes terms of service, which is notorious for being complicated. And you can see on the page there, it uses some nice bullet points, and it's 6 pages you have to initial, which is still kind of a pain, but it's pretty cool. I wish companies would actually do this kind of thing instead of just giving you this blob of capitalized text that you are supposed to wade through and never do. But to be honest, I probably still wouldn't wade through it, would you?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest here. With most license agreements, I skim through them, but I mean, for the real nitty gritty of for the exact wording, I generally rely on the internet to do my screening for me.
Yeah, I can see
just,
that.
I am just hoping that someone else out there has read the whole thing, can understand it, and will somehow let it be known that something is wrong if
something's
they find
wrong,
anything
yeah.
wrong. And
really
I fully trust the blogosphere to kind of echo that around until it gets to me, because I read a lot of blogs.
Yeah, definitely. I pretty much do the same thing. I don't really.
And so I'll skim through it and I'll look for something suspicious. But the thing is, I don't need to take more time and initial more things to get that. Maybe it's the case that in the long run we all do. Because maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are user agreements that I've agreed to that no one else has read either. And that I've agreed to something really stupid.
I'm certain there was that classic, I think we covered this last year on The End User, classic case of a British online company that made a terms of service where
the user
sold them their soul.
Yeah.
So
I remember this well, but I didn't agree to that one.
Didn't agree to that one. Yeah, it's true. It's true. I agree with you. So let's move on to our tip of the week with that, and I've got a pretty juicy one for you. If Microsoft has released a tool that was made basically by an intern or some low-level employee in their, they've got one part of the company where employees can just go and just work on personal projects, and this was one of those. So you can share your mouse between multiple desktop computers if you want to do that with this little add-on. And then if you're not using Windows, you have to use a different tool, and that's called Synergy. And apparently that works pretty well as well, but I've never used Synergy. But you can, with Synergy, you can actually share your mouse between Linux, Mac, and Windows desktops, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And I've seen it work reasonably well. I've seen Synergy work. But it's really nice that Microsoft now has built-in, first-party solution. For
yeah,
Windows
first party
computers.
Is key there,
and that all you need is the software and a network.
Yeah, first party is the key word there. It's kind of hard to trust some third party.
Well, even if you trust them, sometimes they'll be buggy or they'll just be broken by a software update. This one is probably just a bit more reliable.
Yeah, definitely. So the other thing I'd like to do is, maybe this will be a future tip of the week, but I'd like to cloak myself.
You would. Well, you can do it in infrared, but I will still be able to see you. Is that going to be okay?
It's better than nothing.
Yeah, it is better than nothing. Sweden's version of DARPA, they have figured out a way to mask heat signatures of anything up to the size of a tank, basically. They made a wall of 14-centimeter panels that absorb ambient heat and then match it so that it can't be picked out from radiation.
Cool.
Now, it's not perfect. It can't make you perfectly invisible, but it can
so
make you...
it's not
you,
a Harry Potter cloak? Yeah. Is that what you're telling me?
It can make you look like a chunk of ice. Or a cow to an infrared scanner.
So you could also like shapeshift as far as infrared is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can basically make it, it's not just an invisibility cloak. It can kind of make you have the heat signature of anything larger or smaller than you.
Well, that seems really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool if everyone saw an infrared.
So this is something that we will never hear about because the secret ops teams are going to be using it and they're not going to let it out into the public.
Well, I think it'll probably just be really expensive and difficult to get.
Yeah, really expensive, right?
Like, why do they need that? I mean, you don't have infrared goggles, do you?
I may.
Who's,
no, I don't.
Who's gonna,
I don't.
Who's gonna fool you with that?
No,
if you did have infrared goggles, is seeing a cow in infrared, is that going to be okay with you, or would you be suspicious?
If I saw a cow in the middle of Washington, D.C., I'd be pretty damn suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. So, but still, pretty awesome. We didn't have anything like this before, and now we do. Thank you, science. And
thank you, science. What do they say in Portal? What's the all the for science? Or
I don't know. I still haven't played Portal.
Oh, you gotta play Portal. That's ridiculous.
What am I going to play?
It's $10 on Steam on your Mac.
Well, I don't have Steam on my Mac.
But you put Steam on your Mac. What, are you crazy?
My Mac runs too hot to play Steam. Maybe once I fix it, we can try it.
No, I bet you it would work. We'll get together and we'll see.
I can barely play YouTube videos without my computer overheating. I seriously need to reinstall the thermal grease.
Well, we're working on that. We'll keep you updated, maybe on Twitter with some photos when we complete our little project there. So that'll do it for this week. That was a fun one. We had a lot of news since we missed last week.
Yeah, we sure did.
Windows 8! Yes! It's coming. This is the most exciting time of year if you're a fan of Microsoft technologies. Or time of, 3 years or whatever it is.
Or Google, if you're a huge fan of Google. Lots of Google stuff is happening.
Personally, I'm a Zagat enthusiast. I love Zagat technologies. It's just what I'm a power user of. Nothing.
I'll take your word for that one.
All right, so thank you everyone for listening to the show, and of course you can find more information at our blog, that is at theenduser.com, thendusr.com. Join us live every Wednesday night at 8:30 or so p.m. We'll tweet out the time when we decide to go live. That is at live.theenduser.com, and you can follow us on Twitter so we can inform you of that. We are at The End User. I'm Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr, and thank you for our guest who joined us in the chat room this week.
Of course, every week. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.